Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, it's Wednesday. It's time for the weekly wrap. But I put a topic out there, and it has really just taken over the airways. I know that it's something that you've heard about all week. It's about the Georgia school reinstating paddling to punish students. My colleague Anthony McCarthy covered it yesterday when he was with Faraji. But yesterday, the conversation was just people calling and giving their opinion. Today, I wanted to go to someone who researches in this area to talk about what is the real short-term and long-term impact of corporal punishment meted out in the schools toward our children, all children as a whole, and what does it mean for us to be involved in that in our own homes? So I asked Dr. Stacy Patton. She's a professor here at Morgan State University. She's also the author of Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America, and the memoir That Mean Old Yesterday. She has done extensive research in this area, and she's joining us for a second segment. Dr. Stacy, thank you for staying with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, folks, we have the phone lines lit up. If you have questions, give us a call at 410-319-8888. Feel free to chime in on our Facebook Live page. Patricia Clark said, no one will paddle my child except me or their dad. Though I was paddled by my biology teacher, I wouldn't trust a teacher to paddle my child, especially in a school with white teachers. Black kids are over-disciplined in school. But Dr. Stacy, you were saying that it's not interracial, it's typically intra-racial, where you have black teachers who are meting out corporal punishments between black children and white teachers towards white students because the schools are so segregated.
Yes, that's right. And the interesting thing about that mother's comment, she says, you know, nobody else is going to be paddling my child except
me,
myself, or the child's father. Essentially what parents are saying is, well, my violence is the good kind of violence. So, you know, there's this idea that, you know, I'm hitting my child with love.
I've heard
yes.
that. I don't even understand. What does that actually mean, to hit your child with love?
It's a great question, because how do you lovingly assault somebody? How do you lovingly bring pain to somebody's body? So they're trying to trick themselves into believing that what they're doing is not harmful.
No.
It's a lot of wordplay and semantics, and it's really quite dangerous, because what you're teaching your child when you say, I hit you because I love you, same sorts of things that you find, same sort of language you find in adult domestic violence relationships, is to normalize violence.
Right.
And to, to normalize their own oppression, right? And so we shouldn't be surprised then if you have a young girl who gets into a relationship with a man where, you know, she's being hit by him, and then he says, well, you know, I love you.
Right.
Well, you know, the parents were the ones who first trained her to accept that type of behavior anyway.
As love. That is interesting.
As love. Yeah. And it's very confusing to a child. And what happens, once again, you got to think about brain development. So if you start hitting your child at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, and then you rationalize it by saying, this is love, this is protection, it's going to keep you safe from the police, God wants us to do this, it's all part of the brainwashing. And this is why so many people grow up to think that, you know, this was something that was good, and that in black people say, well, I'm the man I am today, the woman I am today, because my mama beat me. I'm not in prison today. I'm not a murderer or a thief because somebody beat me. So I'm like, you agree with Massa, that long-standing racist ideology about black people, that the only way to make us kind, healthy, productive, non-criminal citizens is to process our bodies through violence. And it's really sad to hear so many people buy into that logic.
And that's the conversation that we need to have. I mean, I was just thinking here, and I think about this every time I hear you speak about this topic, and when I read your book, that when my father spanked me, it was never me thinking he was doing it because he loved me.
Mm-hmm.
When my father spanked me, my thought was he did it because he was bigger than me, because he was stronger than me, because he was a bully. It was never, well, he's doing this because he loves me. It was, he's doing this because he can.
Yeah, and
my childhood brain, that's how I kind of rationalized. I was like, he's a bully. He's the bigger
that's
one.
What you just said right there is your childhood brain.
Yes.
And so what people do is they lie, right? They don't look back with the accuracy or the memory or the eyes or the feelings of the child that they once were. Because when I was on the receiving end of this, I didn't feel love. I wanted this to stop. I felt like I cannot survive this.
Yeah.
I saw an ugly face You know, somebody who was angry, who was out of control. I felt like she hated me.
Right.
Not one time did I ever feel love when I had to go pick a switch or go get the belt. Oh. My stomach was turning. My heart was racing. All those biological things we talk about when we talk about fight, flight, or flee.
Yeah.
You know, cortisol, all of that was surging through my body. There was nothing loving
about
those moments. And
no,
if we're going to heal as a people, we have to first be honest and acknowledge that we were traumatized by
this. Because there's nothing, I think one of the things I found to be most traumatic, and I'm going to the calls, I think that part of the spanking process, to me, it starts with all the trauma of having to go out and pick your own switch. Mm-hmm. A lot of people may not know that. I mean, that to me seems like a Southern thing. I mean, going out from my grandmother's house to pick the weapon that you're going to use to discipline me. And if I don't pick the right size, you're going to come out and get a bigger one. Or in our case, with my family, it wasn't a bigger one. You want the bigger ones, right? It was the thin ones that would kind of really leave welts on your leg.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about today, folks. 419-388-8888. We have Mr. T on the line. Mr. T, thank you for joining myself and Dr. Stacy.
God bless you both. Interesting conversation, and appreciate your input into the conversation. First of all, one love, and let's pray for everybody going through the hurricane stuff in the South.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So, God bless us all there. Very interesting. I think that from my experience and understanding, when you spare the rod, spoil the child, but it's really through 1 through 5 years old. If you're coming to whacking your kid after 5 or 6, there's a psychological difference, and it's going to give you a different psychological impact. Just want to say that as well. As far as how the heck did we get here, you know, Jesus was taken out of schools in the early 60s, and the Lord in schools would help a lot of this, I do believe. And let's not play the victim, although, you know, we're all victims of our parents, and they did their best, hopefully. But, you know, all of our parents are failed. But, you know, let's not play victim. And what about black-on-black crime?
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. T. I appreciate you calling. I appreciate Mr. T calling. Let's cut him off only because I think one of the things now, Stacy, you and I can have a long conversation because I think you know more than anybody else.
The real Mr. T that was calling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get so upset when people talk about black on black crime because there's this notion that black people are more likely to commit crimes as if there's no such thing as white on white crime. Well, all the research, as I've said more than one time on this show, all the research shows that people tend to commit crimes more in their neighborhoods. So white folks do commit more crimes against white people, and black people do commit. But I'm going to leave the black on black crime thing alone because Mr. T went completely off the point. But what I thought was interesting, other than some of the mythological stuff he said, but what I thought was interesting is his belief that you do use the rod on a child that's 0 to 5. And I'm wondering, like, how are we justifying spanking a 2-year-old or 3-year-old? And saying, well, it's better to do it then before they get 10 years old.
Once again, and I just shook my head. You probably felt it through the phone. You know, all the neurological research that we have, the breakthroughs that we have on brain development show that ages 0 to 3, actually, are the most important development, the most rapid period of development in a child's brain. So if you want to learn how to play music, if you want to teach a child how to speak a foreign language, I mean, their brains are like sponges.
Right.
They start to develop, you know, very, very quickly. And their environment is so crucial at this period. So what they're listening to, their sleep habits, what you're feeding them, language acquisition. So when you start hitting a child at that age, what happens is you begin to wire the child's brain to avoid fear. So then you're undercutting certain other areas of the brain that are needed for development, language acquisition, cognition. So if you got a kid that you've been hitting for the first 5 years of their life, and then they get into school and they're acting up, and then people are like, oh, these kids today, what was happening to them in those first 5 years of their development when you had parents yelling at them, coercing them, hitting them, not teaching, not modeling? So this whole idea that there's a different psychological impact after age 5 is absolutely absurd.
I also think that there's something else, and I'm going to say this quickly so we can get to all of the calls, but I think that people get very confused when they throw out the argument that the reason all this is happening is because we took prayer out of school. We took prayer out of school. It was 1962 that prayer, that the Supreme Court ruled that you took prayer out of school. Think about what was happening in the black community and in this country prior to 1962. We were dealing with, you know, Jim Crow that came up. We were dealing with trying to get schools to integrate. We were dealing with lynchings across. It wasn't because they prayed that it stopped them from doing that. Prayer in school did not stop the type of violence that we saw in this society. And people think if we just put prayer back, then that will stop, you know, school shootings, and that will stop youth violence, and that will stop spanking. Like, all that's going to stop by just bringing prayer back in school. And there's so many Christian schools with all the issues they're having, you're not going to tell me that the only answer to saving our country is to put prayer back in school.
And the biggest irony is that when we look at where the schools are, where the paddling is legal, most of it's in the Bible Belt.
And where they're praying. They're praying and spanking.
And misquoting Bible verses.
Yes, every single time. And I know that as a daughter of a pastor. Oh, my word. I'm not going to turn this into my own personal session here. I could talk with you offline. We have John on the phone from Ellicott City. John, thank you for holding, and welcome to the conversation.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. I've been enjoying the conversation, and I'm a strong supporter of studies and what have you, but let me ask you a couple quick things. I don't believe that, you know, schools should be in that business, and just like you said, it's mostly in red states, the Bible Belts. But did the study control the frequency of spankings, and did it control the severity and manner in which the spankings were applied, and age of child? Now, I think it included age of child, or the time that the various intervals in which the spankings were applied.
Dr.
They
Stacey?
Didn't get down to that level of sadistic detail.
Well,
what they do is when children, and it varies by district and by state, the Office of Civil Rights collects this data through the Department of Education. So basically, when a child is sent in for, you know, this type of punishment, it's recorded, so that data is collected. I have not seen details disaggregated by age of child or size of the child. There was nobody there in the room to measure wind velocity or any of the physics of how hard the paddle was swung on the child. We don't know those sorts of details. We just know by race. Whether a child has a disability. We don't know always how many times a child was hit. Some districts say that, you know, a child can't be struck more than three times. Some say that a male administrator is not supposed to hit a female child, but that still happens as well.
No,
but these other, like,
okay, hold on. You can't talk at the same time. Let me have John go ahead and finish. Go ahead, John.
Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about, you know, schools applying any corporal punishment, because that's not, that they shouldn't be in that business. But now, I know this is anecdotal, and I usually frown upon that, but just about everybody in my circle at one point in time, and I'll give you my own experience, you know, with spank. My parents, they came out of the South, Alabama, and I was spanked only three times in my entire life. And I remember they didn't believe in indiscriminate, because there were a lot of kids who were spanked so often they had no idea what they were being spanked for. But it was for three lessons that he wanted to instill. And he used his open hand on my butt. And I was less than 10 years old when these things were done. One, when some older cousins of mine had me rolling out a watermelon out of a store that was next to our house, and he taught me, you do not steal.
Okay.
Two, when I had skates and I jumped on the back of an ice cream truck and I was riding with the skates, you don't take unnecessary risks like that with your life. You only have one.
Mm-hmm.
And once, when I talked back to him, he made it clear, you do not talk back. Now, all these things occurred before I was the age of 10, and they taught me lifelong lessons, which I carried on. Now, I don't know about all these other people beating people for everything and all that other stuff. My mother never did spank me. And my daughter, I never did spank her.
May I ask you how old you are, John, if you don't mind sharing?
I'm 77.
70 years old. Okay, I'm going to stop you there.
I have a friend who somewhere along the line, and as I look back, I was not traumatized. And now I'm not saying that, you know, that people should go out and spank them, because a lot of people now don't know how to apply it, because I've seen people grabbing kids by the arm and yanking them and cursing them out. No, and given that, doctor, I would agree with you, because I don't think most of these people now, growing up now, are emotionally capable of applying, because you don't do it in anger.
Right.
You don't do it at all.
All right. Thank you so much, John. Now, one thing I want to note that John said, Dr. Stace, before I go to the next call, and I want to let Stephen know. Stephen, you are next. Hold on. He was spanked three times. Now, he's 77 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He is remembering three spankings from before
specific.
He was 10. I mean, like, I'm just looking at the specific detail. Talk about the way that the spankings have that kind of memory imprint. I mean, he's going back almost 60 years here.
Yes. The fact that he can remember those moments with that kind of specificity is evidence that it was traumatic to him.
Yes.
That right there in and of itself. And that, again, you know, when we talk about brain development, you know, he is convinced that he would not have learned not to steal, to show respect,
and to not take unnecessary
risks without having somebody put their hands on him.
Wow.
And once again, that's problematic. And then he says, you know, he still endorses hitting by saying you don't do it when you're angry. To me, that's even more sadistic.
Well, like, I think so it's interesting, but he never did it to his daughter. Let's make a note. He said,
I never. But other people should do it to their kids.
And
they should be emotionally mature enough to know how to apply it the right way.
Oh, come on. All right,
so that's the lifelong impact that those three moments had on his thinking, his cognition on this. He doesn't see it as violence, as something that's potentially harmful, whether you do it one time, three times, or you do it indiscriminately, or when you're angry, or when you're calm.
From 67 years ago.
Yes.
Folks, we have Stephen on the phone. Stephen, thank you for joining the conversation.
Yes, good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Doctor, with all due respect, I think that's your opinion. He wasn't traumatized. All the three things he said, I think, in my opinion, just help him to understand that if you do all those three things, the consequences can be worse. So I have a question for you, both of you.
Okay.
Were you spanked when you was a child?
Yes, I was. This is Dr. K.
What about you, ma'am? Yep.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, and that makes you a better people, right?
No, not at all.
I'm serious about it. So
I'm serious too.
Okay.
When I said no just now, I am serious about the amount of work that I had to do. No, not at all.
May I?
Yeah, but you asked a question and then you made a comment.
Okay.
So we had to respond.
So this is the thing. I don't have no problem that to push a European liberal agenda to our community.
European liberal agenda?
Even though you guys don't understand that the liberal European agenda fell in our community. That's why we are where we are. Because the research that the doctor talking about, you have other research who say the opposite of what she said. Nobody is talking about abusing a child. And this is a problem. Because the people like your guest try to tell us how to raise, educate our children.
I haven't tried to tell anybody how to do anything.
No,
that's information.
Why you apply,
ma'am. I've shared facts. I've shared science.
No. It's not a fact, ma'am. That's why you are.
So now, this is what I don't understand. Okay, thank you so much, Stephen. So I just want to come back, Dr. Stacey, because there seems to be a bit of confusion here, which is why I came to you. I came to you, Dr. Stacey, not to just get your opinion, because I think everybody has an opinion. I could have gotten, my sister on here for her opinion, and we could have opened up the phones, and we could have talked about spanking for 2 hours with people's opinions.
Yes.
That's not what I wanted to do. To me, that's great conversation over a cup of coffee at night. That's not what we're doing. We're actually trying to look at what the research says, and it is not, as he said, a European liberal agenda to talk about the ways in which our behavior potentially harms and mm-hmm. can harm, and in so many ways has already harmed
yes.
our children, which means we're setting up a cycle for the next generation. Because yes. we have children already who are going to say, you know, I grew up and I'm a good person, so why can't I do it to my child?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. K, sometimes a man's comments stand as their own embarrassing rebuttal.
Yes, we'll definitely have to talk about that because I don't even understand that. Let's keep going. We have Charles on the phone from Parkville. Charles, I want to thank you for joining the conversation.
Thanks, doctor. I agree with Dr. Stacy. I was not spanked, and the reason why I think it worked for me is because I know in my heart I never wanted to disappoint. My mother and grandmother raised me, first of all, and I never wanted to disappoint them. Okay, or bring any shame to my family or to my race. And even as a child, I did not want the police coming to my house, knocking on the door, because I knew my mom would be mortified. And, you know, when you start talking about discipline, I feel that spanking is nothing more than just a shortcut to discipline. Because people don't either have the time or want to take the time, because discipline takes time and repetition and modeling. And a lot of times you see these parents nowadays, they won't stick with it. You know, you deprive a kid of certain privileges, and then you say 2 weeks. And then after 4 days with right. the kid pouting, moping, whatever, the parent will cut it short. So what have you taught there? What has the child learned? And to me, spanking just says might makes right. If I'm bigger and stronger than you, then I can enforce my will on you. And I think it's absolutely wrong, and I think it's one of the reasons why we have the violence that you see out here today.
Now, let me ask you this, Charles, if I may. How old are you?
I'm 65.
Yeah, because I'm just kind of taking just kind of an unofficial tally here, just looking, because to see kind of where people are falling because of how our society is supposed to be getting better, and yet we have people who are my age who are doing it with their kids.
I have a question for the doctor real quick. I had a falling out with my father over this because he chose to spank my son when he was visiting him just for about 30 minutes. And I took exception to it because I told him that is not something that I was doing with him, and I didn't think it was proper. And I felt he did not have the relationship with him to do it because he didn't spend any time with him. I mean,
you just disciplined him.
And to me, I don't think you should be doing that.
I agree.
Without, and I'm just curious to know what the doctor thinks about that when you see, say, a grandparent doing something, and the parent definitely has a prohibition against it.
All right. So, Dr. Stacy, I'm going to hold you there. Thank you so much, Charles, because I'm going to hold that answer to when we come back, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
When we come back, Rob, Leo, Mike, Judy, I'm going to take you after the break. Folks, this is a fascinating conversation based upon the research. I'm here with Dr. Stacy Patton. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk on the other side.
Jazz is an essential part of the universal language of music, one that anyone can understand and connect to. Music like this deserves a secure home on the radio dial. Become a part of the team that helps make great jazz possible. Do your part now by making a donation to keep Jazz on Public Radio 88.9 alive and well. Go to WEAA.org and click the Donate Now button. Thank you for listening.
Our world is more connected than ever. Technology has brought us closer together and helped move us further apart. So who you choose to listen to matters. I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. There's more than just knowing what everybody's talking about. You need to really understand it, too. Get involved. Speak freely on 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon here on WEAA 88.9 FM.
Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, we are having a very interesting and I would say hard conversation because we're talking about the short and long term impacts of spanking, beating, whooping, whatever you call it, on our children. We are not just kind of saying that this is okay and supporting one another. No, no, no. We are breaking this down and we're talking about why this as a practice is something that stems from American enslavement and the ways in which it is psychologically, mentally, emotionally, and physically affecting our children when we are meeting out this type of punishment. We're not even getting into why the school shouldn't do that. That's happening in Georgia. We're definitely not condoning that. We're saying let's go deeper. We shouldn't even be doing it. And we're not just dealing with our opinion. We asked Dr. Stacy Patton. She's the author of Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. She's also a professor here at Morgan State University. This is her area of research and she's laying it down for us. Dr. Stacy, thank you for staying with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. K.
Yes, and when we went to break, Charles shared the story. Charles is 65 years old. He was not spanked when he was raised at all. He was raised by his mother and grandmother. He took his son to visit his father, and his father spanked his child. Now, I couldn't understand if he spanked the child for 30 minutes or if it was only a 30-minute visit.
It was a visit.
So he is concerned about the impact, you know, the grandparent doing this. But what would you say if your child has been spanked? And now we're on the other side of this. Like for parents who have spanked their child and now they're thinking about what they have done, what do you do to kind of heal the relationship? Like, how do you deal with this?
Well, this gentleman was basically saying that his father, who is his son's grandfather, spanked him and he objected to it.
Yes.
And so he and his father had a falling out over this.
Right.
And so I see this many times in families where, you know, the adult has grown up, they experience corporal punishment, they feel negative about what happened to them in their childhood, or they've done the research and they know better and they want to do better and they want to break the cycle of violence and they don't want their children to experience the same sort of psychological impact that they had growing up. And so they abstain from hitting their kids. And then they go, that their child goes around grandma or auntie, uncle, and, you know, somebody lays hands on the child. And then they have problems. And so they have to stand up to their family, the mother, father, whomever, and say, don't put your hands on my kid. And that's almost treasonous to some family members. It becomes a sort of commentary like, well, what are you saying? It worked for you. Are you trying to say I was a bad parent, that I'm wrong? And so that's where you get into these conflicts. So it takes courage for folks within their own families to say, I'm not going to do this. I love you, Mom, Dad. You did your best. But I know better, and I'm going to do better now. This isn't going to work for me and my family. And so you can say to your parents, look, you know, I love you. I honor you. I will always honor you. But what you did to my body was harmful. I didn't like it. It didn't feel good. It impacted me. And I'm going to change my behavior.
Now, with that, just to kind of push in, I'm going to go to the calls. You're coming next, callers. But I'm just wondering, for parents who are listening right now, parents who have may have already spanked their child, how do they go back now and correct this situation? I mean, they can't take the spanking back or spankings back. What do they do? Do they have a conversation about it? Do they go and do they apologize? Do they get the child some counseling? What do you do if you're on the other side in this conversation, which is great, but you've already kind of crossed that line?
Mm-hmm. So the wonderful thing about children's bodies and their brains, they're very resilient and they can heal. So you can heal the trauma. You can, you know, reverse the damage. You may not be able to take back those memories of having hit your kid or your child experiencing violence from you. But the first thing to do is apologize. And to a lot of people, they cringe at the idea of having to apologize to a child because a child is their property. Children are inferior, right? That's the attitude that we have about kids. But the parents that I work with, the first thing they do is they apologize. And then they take a pledge. So if you go on www.spearthekids.com, I actually have pledge certificates that parents download and they read to their children this pledge that, you know, they will not put their hands on them. They will do nothing to violate their bodily autonomy and integrity and anything that might harm their development in the future. And the child signs this document and the parent signs this document. And they have this thing hanging in their home as a as a reminder. And then the real hard work begins. So first, you've got to be committed to making the change. That I want to do something else different. A lot of people say, "Well, timeout doesn't work," and they've never even tried timeout.
Right.
And so you've been beating all these years. You've been coercing and instilling fear in your child. That's the only thing that they know how to react to.
Right.
You've already set the stage for this. And half of the work is the parent doing some soul searching and reflecting on their own childhood. And really getting honest about the impact that being beat and, you know, coerced and stressed out has had on their own development, their emotional, their spiritual, their physical development. So they have to work is working on the parent and coming to terms with their own childhood. And then learning about child development. So what's age appropriate? What's age appropriate for a three-year-old? Are your expectations for a three-year-old too unreasonable? Learning about different strategies. The internet is full of free material. You can Google your question. What happened? What do I do if my child lies? If my child steals? If my child won't eat their vegetables? My child is wetting the bed? On my site, sparethekids.com, there are all kinds of parenting tips. So people need to do the work of learning about how children's brains develop and what their behaviors should look like. That's half the battle right there.
All right, I'm going to go to some of these phone calls. I just want to be clear. Someone asked a question online very quickly. She said, Patricia Clark said, the doctor appears to be contradicting herself. Is she fine with the teacher paddling our kids and not the parents? I think you're saying none of it's okay. Am I correct in saying that?
I never said
okay,
that.
Good.
No teachers, no parents.
Nobody
should put their hands on children.
Okay, we're going to go through these calls just to let people know where they are in the queue. Judy, Rob, Leo, Mike, and Buddy, I'm coming in that order. Judy from East Baltimore, you want to chime in, please?
Okay, we're going to go.
Judy, can you turn your radio down, please?
Judy, Rob, Leo, Mike, and Buddy, I'm coming in that order.
Judy. All right, folks, we're going to cut off Judy. All right, we're going to go to Rob. Rob from Forest Park, how are you?
I'm doing well this afternoon. How are you both?
We're doing well. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Okay.
Do you want to chime in quickly?
I talked to Mr. Anthony yesterday. I'm going to stand by everything I said.
Okay.
As far as the mothers, and these, I'm talking about young mothers today. But Dr. K, nobody really knows what kind of work I've done. For 21 years, I've worked with young people from 10 to 17.
Okay.
And I thought I could save the world. No. And there was a good, growing, learning experience for me.
But hold on, Rob. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit confused. When you say you're going to stand by everything that happened, everything you said, are you saying that you are in support of this or you're against? Because we're not sure what you said yesterday.
Okay. No, I told him, I said, for teachers, don't put your hands on other people's children.
Okay.
You know, as far as the mothers, you know, hey, Doc, believe me, you know I'm hood and I know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Some mothers, not all mothers, and not all young people are bad. But you have mothers today, their teenage daughters are raising their families,
right,
her children, you know, and it's a lot of pressure. And I talked to MTA drivers, and I had the experience of riding the 77. They're out of order. But like I said, I know that some of them will smoke blunts before they go to school, and this is the only time they really get a chance to vent. So my heart goes out to them.
Okay, thank you so much.
What I said.
Okay, thank you so much, Rob. We appreciate that. We have Judy from East Baltimore. Judy, is your phone fixed now?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
I would like to ask your guest, the doctor, do they have paperwork that's where the children's parents sign where another adult has to be present when you drop my child's underwear? Because this is really troubling me.
Okay. No, the rules vary by district. So basically the parents at the beginning of the school year are given an opt-in or opt-out form. So if you say, yes, please go ahead and paddle my child, that school administration is given permission to hit your child. Different districts have different rules about how it's administered. Some kids might be hit right in front of the classroom. Others are taken into a back office. In some districts, it should be mail on mail, but some of them violate it, so a male teacher could hit your daughter. So it just varies by the district. In some cases, I've never seen any case where it says that somebody else has to be present to witness your child being paddled by a teacher or principal.
All right. Thank you so much, Judy. We have Leo Burrows on the phone. Hello, Leo. How are you? Thanks for chiming in, sir.
I'm fine, Dr. K-Wise Whitehead and Dr. Stacy Patton.
Yes.
It's a wonderful show. I agree, Dr. Patton, with the idealism of your advocacy and the factual data that you've shared. However, I'm 76 years old, and I'm reminded by one of my friends who teaches currently in the middle school here in Baltimore City, how she was hit in the head by a trash can wielding student, and nothing was done about it except to allow that student 3 weeks after she returned to class to come back to class. Corporal punishment, when inflicted by students against their parents and teachers, is also unacceptable. Our society is one that prizes warfare and honors warfare. The police use corporal punishment, and of course, public schools are generally, unfortunately, out of control. I guess I'm going to conclude by saying the military power and the advocacy of violence is something that we should abhor, but it is real, and conflict resolution, I agree, needs to be promoted first and foremost. But I'm not going to allow a teenager, not a baby, I'm not going to allow a 14 or 15-year-old kid, if I'm able-bodied, to do anything to me by virtue of my ability to defend myself.
Right.
Yes, I will call the police, but I'm going to try my best to knock him unconscious, him or her. I will not be abused by teenagers either. But keep up the good work, Dr. Patton. You're on the right track in a rough environment. This is a hell of a society, but we're in it, and you're the roadmap to helping us get out of what we're in.
Thank you so much, Leo. I appreciate that, because Stacy, I'm not sure if you would disagree with that. Leo's not saying corporal punishment. He's saying if a teenager attacks him, he's going to defend himself. And that's kind of a different conversation, right?
Yeah, that's a different conversation.
Right.
And generally, I mean, and again, we have so many conversations about bullying in schools,
right,
whether it's kids against other kids, whether it's children who are violent toward their teachers.
Right.
But then we still have to get to the root of this. They didn't just wake up. This kid didn't just wake up one day and decide, I'm going to have a violent outburst in the class. What started happening to that child when they were 1 year old, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Yeah.
Who taught them that?
Yeah.
You know, what has happened to his emotional regulation skills, his inability to talk or solve conflict or get his point across without picking up a trash can and assaulting a teacher?
Right.
So we have to get back to, well, what happened at home? What is the foundation of that kid's, you know, violent outburst? And that's what we don't want to have these conversations. We just want to say, oh, these kids are so out of control.
Right. Where does it come
who's
from?
Raising them?
Right.
Who's raising them?
All right. I'm going to go to some more phone calls. We have Mike from Rosedale. Mike, thank you for chiming in. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. How y'all ladies doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you.
All right. I grew up in the 60s. And this was right during the time when Martin Luther King was, you know, everybody was protesting.
Right.
And you still live in black neighborhoods.
Right.
Now, I don't remember bad kids back then. I mean, we did our little things back then, but I remember well-disciplined kids back then. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. No. And I think two things happened. And it's too late for both of them now.
Okay.
When they took prayer out of school, that was, to me, I think that was damaging. And when they stopped parents from disciplining their children. Now, it's too late to incorporate either one of those now. But if neither one of those was taken away during those times, I think things would have turned out a little better for a lot of kids out here nowadays.
All right.
You have kids, when you have a child or a teenager that tells you what they're not going to do
right
in your home, what are you supposed to do? You're going to take the phone away? You're going to make them stay in their room when they can climb out the window or do anything else? What do you do then?
All right.
You're going to put them away?
All right. Thank you so much, Mike. Now, what's interesting, Dr. Stacy, because we've already talked about the prayer in school thing, so I'm going to leave that alone. What I think is interesting that Mike said was what happens when your teenager doesn't listen to you. Now, I'm raising teenagers, as you know. At 17 and 15, the behavior they're exhibiting now, it's not like it's new behavior. I know exactly where it's coming from. I don't think you instill respect between the parent and the child at 17. That's something that happens over a lifetime in building that relationship. When I take my son's phone from him and when I tell him he can't do something, I walk out of that room and I am assured in my spirit he's not going to climb out the window. I don't think he's going to come bust me in the head. I don't think he's going to take my keys. I really don't think any of that, because we have a relationship that's been established over the long haul, that he is assured that I love him and I'm doing the best I can, both his father and I. But I never go, you know, I wonder if I'm going to wake up and my kids are going to be standing over me. I have that fear not at all. Or if I tell him something, I mean, Stacey, my son is 6'1". I think you met him. If he wanted to push past me and go on his own, he actually could, because he's big enough to do that. But when he stops because I tell him to stop, it's not because he's afraid I'm getting ready to hit him, because hitting him at 6'1", he's not going to hurt. It's the respect and the love.
I'm going to say this, and I'm so glad you're saying this as a mother, the parent of teenagers. When I listen to Black people talk about our kids, you know, it reminds me of like those Black beast narratives, those racist white supremacist narratives that, you know, were produced during Jim Crow. About the criminality of our kids, right? You know, like I hear Black mothers say, well, if I don't whoop my son, and they're usually talking about a toddler, you know, he's going to knock me down one day. The parents, you know, the kids are killing the parents. Like people actually say that. The kids are killing the parents. But I say, okay, let's go to the FBI data.
Yeah, let's take a look at that. Let's take a look at that.
Or parenticide, which is children who kill their parents. Now, the majority of first of all, that's like a minuscule number of kids who kill their parents in this country annual. It's minuscule. And the people who actually do it are actually adults, and they're white males. Okay,
so we could
get that, once again, grammar of white supremacy off of our tongue when we talk about the, hypothetical criminality of Black children.
That might happen.
Yeah, they might kill us, they knock us in the head, you know, all of that stuff, right? And it's the same kind of language that police officers use.
Yep. I pull my gun because he might have. No, I'm agreeing with you. Oh, I'm so happy to have you on the phone.
We speak the same language. And a lot of these people have never even encountered a violent teenager.
Not at all.
Have never even been assaulted by.
Not at the level that they're talking about helping their child to train against. We have a couple people who want to try them. And I have Stacy on the phone. Stacy's a new caller calling in from Alabama. Stacy, welcome to the family.
Thank you so much. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm here with Dr. Stacy as well.
Yeah, excuse me. I'm homeschooling my daughter, so you'll hear her in the background.
No problem.
I just wanted to comment about community. I really feel, I know we keep talking about what we need and what we had in the past, and I'm young. I'm 44 years old. But I do feel like as a stay-at-home mom, community is really, really important. And if we work in incorporating community, parents can get a break, as well as children learning other forms of discipline. I'm not a fan of using violence for discipline, although that was the way I was raised. But I feel like there's other ways. Chores can be increased. Certain things can be taken away, and also limiting the amount of media. We don't have a TV in our home, and that's by choice. We have very limited devices. We do a lot of nature building, but I really feel like rites of passages and community, and going back to our, as much as we can, our natural way of living, our traditional way of living, incorporating elders, and then also allowing our children to see our follies. I think a lot of times we get embarrassed when our children act out in front of people, and that may push us to want to, you know, punish them or discipline them in a way of force, because you're not going to embarrass me. But at the same time, we're not infallible. So if our children can see our mistakes, and then we can say, you know, we make mistakes. Let me show you how I recover from my mistakes. that way our children can also learn, okay, my parents do make mistakes and they do this and this and this to learn, you know, because a lot of times nature will correct them in ways that we don't even have to do it. You know, like a lot of times my children will do something and then something will happen. I'm like, see, nature just corrected you. So you need to be mindful
and learn the lesson, right?
What your actions are. You know, mommy told you no several times. You didn't listen. So now nature had to correct you. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like community, nature, rites of passage are really key and important so that we can't perpetuate this violence.
I agree. Thank you so much, Stacey, for calling with your child in the background. That's wonderful to hear. You know what's interesting, Dr. Stacey, is that when I see parents in the grocery store and the child is screaming and yelling, and I remember the days when that happened to me, but I never felt like, let me hit my child to quiet them up. What I thought about is there are days when I don't feel like being out, when I'm tired, when I'm frustrated. I can't just yell and scream because I'm the adult, but my child can't say, hey, mommy, can we just go home? My child can't say that. So instead of screaming at the child, wanting to hit the child, I would say when they start screaming, it's time to go. Like, it is actually to whatever I'm doing can't take precedence over whatever you're. Let's go outside. Let's talk about it, because maybe you just need a timeout from the environment as a whole. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're tired after preschool, day school, elementary school, and going to the grocery store right now is a little bit overwhelming, and you don't know how to tell me that.
Exactly. I think people, once again, when you understand brain development, for every action there's a need, and children don't have yet the language skills to articulate their feelings, the emotional literacy. And so, you know, they may be tired, they may be hungry, they may be bored. And, you know, people, I love how people bring children to church. You know, Black people stay in church all day.
And expect them
long.
To be quiet and stay awake, and you can't even stay awake. Come on now. Come on.
So we have these unreasonable expectations for our kids and what they're capable of doing according to their age.
We expect our children to be adults, and they're not.
That we adultify. We complain about how the white world denies our children innocence and empathy and understanding.
And we do the same thing.
And we do the exact same thing before the white world even gets their hands on them.
Well, I'm going to try to get some more phone. The phone calls are just lit up here. We have Imbu on the phone from Reservoir Hill. Imbu, how are you? I'm going to keep the comments short because I have a lot of people who want to chime in. Yes, sir. Or ma'am.
I appreciate you.
Yes.
I'm kind of twisted because, like, I like both sides of this conversation.
Mm.
I think the doctor that you have on has been dropping so much information and busting myths.
Yeah.
We live by so many freaking myths and things that ain't true.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I came up in a household where I was spanked and disciplined regularly.
Mm.
And my two brothers were also. But that wasn't the only means of discipline in the household.
Right.
Just like the last caller called in, they would take away privileges. They would take away activities and events you wanted to participate in. They would add more chores that you had to deal with in the household in order to correct your behavior. Usually when you got spanked because you were like out of order and they didn't want the world to drop down on you and show you what really, really, really reciprocity is.
Right.
And I was normally, like a brother earlier called, said I was normally disciplined by my mother. My mother was always my best friend. No matter what she put on me, looking back, I know she was never trying to hurt me.
Right.
She was only trying to steer me in the right direction. So there's got to be a balance between the two.
Okay, thank you so much, Imbu. I'm going to come back to you, Dr. Stacey, because I'm going to try to get another caller in here. I'm waiting to see if we can get another couple of callers in here before we go. We have Eric on the phone from Randallstown. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Wonderful. I just wanted to ask, it was kind of touched on, but does the doctors, is there any statistics or anything that shows the problems that a lot of children have, basically maybe coming from single family households? Because, you know, I see a lot of instances where, you know, young mothers are overwhelmed. And I don't see any male presence a lot of times when I'm in the mall or if I'm in a department store.
Okay.
And I'll get off the phone real quick.
Okay. Thank you so much, Eric. So, Dr. Stacy, very quickly, is there any information when you look at all the research you have, and I know it doesn't drill down that deep into, what somebody say, wind velocity, but does it drill down into the makeup of the household? Does it happen more in two-parent households or single-parent households, or does it not delineate that much?
It doesn't delineate that much.
Okay.
I mean, this is a parenting practice that extends across race, region, religion,
okay,
marital status.
Okay, so it's
education.
Not just about single moms here,
no,
which is what he was talking about.
Problem.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. We have Buddy on the phone from West Baltimore. Buddy, very quickly, you have a quick comment?
Very quickly, yeah. I was just thinking about a whole lot of it, and it's about surely by the time, if we ain't accord with the time, then we lost. And what she's doing is great because we got to break generational curses.
Yes.
Because back then, they was beating their kids, so they wouldn't let them beat them and kill them. So
yeah.
Now they got the beating and coming up, and now we more information, more technology and things that we can talk to them and do it a different way. Because like what you said, what that man was talking about, for 77 years, I remember mine too. But the bottom line is I was in the car talking to my daughter and my grandkids was in here, and we was talking about that. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of another way.
Yeah, and we're trying to get
dialogue.
Some. Yeah. We're trying to get some. Thank you so much, buddy. I think we have time for one more comment. All right, we have Paul W. Hello, Paul. How are you? Very quickly, sir. You want to chime in?
Yes, ma'am. What I was about to say is that she's on the right page. You really don't have to beat and bind and things of that nature. But when you ask for help from the state and things like that, like they maybe did where the young man was stealing cars and stuff like that, he had mentors. He had his mother that was working hard and things of that nature. You have a few other things, but I was like, where do you go at? I mean, what do you do? Because like you said, at one time our parents were beating us to keep the society from,
right,
from stomping down on you. But right now, they giving these kids life. Well, they can't give them life, but they locking them up. They're incarcerating them. Right. They got these games. All these games are killer games.
All right, now I'm going to stop you there, Paul W. I'm so sorry, Apache. We can't get to you. We got to wrap up. Dr. Stacy Patton, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you coming. She is a professor here at Morgan State University, the author of Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. Dr. Stacy, if you can give your website one more time about where people can go for the Take the Pledge with their children.
Yes, to Take the Pledge, parenting tips, watch videos, www.sparethekids.com.
www.sparethekid.com. Dr. Stacy, again, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, folks, I just appreciate you, and I appreciate you sitting through this conversation. Like I said, I heard it yesterday with my colleague, Anthony McCarthy, and it's something I wanted to follow up on, not just our opinions. What does the research say about corporal punishment, whether or not it's coming from a principal or a teacher, or whether it's coming from the parents, the grandparents, the ones who are supposed to love and protect them? We've got to find a better way. We got to break generational curses, and we have to lean in and love our children and love them hard, because that's what's going to help them get through. Loving them and teaching them and disciplining them and correcting them without then resorting to corporal punishment. This has really been an interesting conversation. Do note that Today with Dr. K is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by my award-winning producer, Justina Pollard, along with my board operator, Andre Melton. We have a new intern, Deja, who I'm very happy she's joining us. Stay tuned, because up next is For the Culture with Faraji. Faraji is back today. Remember, folks, that here on Today with Dr. K, your voice matters, your opinion matters, because we are telling stories that matter. We are here for you, and we are listening, because if it happens in this country, in this city, if it has your ear, it has our attention. WEAA 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. Keep it here for a quick update from MTA.
And a good evening, everyone. We have a new local link bus diversion. This includes Yellow southbound line diverted at Hollins Ferry and Hammonds Ferry because of police activity. Northbound direction is diverted at Daisy and Hollins Ferry for the same reason. Purple line eastbound diverted at Pratt and Pulaski. The brown line diverted northbound at Broadway and Biddle. The purple line diverted at Baltimore and Schroeder along with 78 westbound. The purple line and 78 eastbound diverted at Baltimore and Cary. No delays reported anywhere in the Metro subway link. It's running on time in both directions between Owings Mills and Johns Hopkins. Light rail link is likewise running well between Hunt Valley and Glen Burnie. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.
Celebrating 40 years of broadcasting. Morgan State University Public Radio. 88.9 WEAA FM and HD1. Baltimore.